Well, good morning. Like I said earlier, we are so incredibly excited that you are here with us as we arrive at the finish line with week 5 out of this 5-part series called At the Movies. And while we know that many of us in this room are sad to see this series go, what we also acknowledge is that there are some of you in this room or watching online that are experiencing this series for the very first time. And for those of you who are here for the first time, or maybe just back for the first time in a really long time, what we want you to know is this, is we did all of this from this room to the lobby to the parking lot specifically for you, because we wanted you to understand this truth, that we have a God who isn't boring, and so church shouldn't be either. And we believe with all of our heart that we have a God who's worth encountering, and we wanted you to encounter our Jesus in a totally unexpected way. And we wanted you to know that we're a church that's willing to do anything short of sin to reach people. And so that's what this series is all about. It's the reason why we've gone on this journey through 4 different movies and 4 different genres, exploring truths that we believe with all of our hearts have the power to influence and impact our futures and our lives. And this morning, we aren't done yet. We've got one more incredible movie left, and we know that it's an incredible movie that has power in it because if nothing else, it's got The Rock. Whether you want to admit it or not, or whether you are jealous of his muscles or his looks or the way in which your significant other swoons over The Rock, what you are forced to admit is this. The Rock is an incredible actor. He can play so many different roles, as long as they're all about beating people up, I guess. But like, he can be the football player in The Game Plan and switch to the football coach in Gridiron Gang. He can be the CIA agent in Central Intelligence or the professor in Jumanji. He finds himself doing an incredible bad guy in The Mummy, or for those of us who are comic fans, in Will Ferrell's The Other Guys. No matter what it is, somehow, even down to being a great father in San Andreas and Skyscraper, The Rock has this ability to take any role he's given in any movie and make it a box office hit. And every week throughout this series, we've wanted to bring y'all into the fold and have a little fun at the beginning of our messages so that y'all could engage with us. And we thought, we're not getting rid of that for the last week of the series. And so today we thought this. We thought that every single one of us in this room must have at least an actor or an actress who you connect with. It may not be The Rock, but it's that person who every time they're in a movie, it intrigues you enough to think, I need to go see that movie because that person is in it. For me, it's Will Smith. Like, there ain't much better out there than Hitch, am I right? Will Smith was incredible in movies like I Am Legend, and I shouldn't admit this. Y'all, I was a man before I was a pastor. Movies like Bad Boys and Men in Black, and even all the way back to his younger days. And anybody remember Will Smith and Independence Day? And I think I was hooked on Will Smith and anything he brought out from the time I memorized, yo, this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called. Hey-o, you guys are with me. I'll spare you the rest. That's as good as the singing gets for me on this stage. We leave that to my wife. But to bring y'all into this fold, I thought, whoever that person is for you, I'd love for you to share it with the person or the persons around you. And if you're sitting there by yourself and there's no one that you really know around you, we didn't want you to be left out. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. You can crack open your weekly and pull out that white notes page in the middle. And on the back, there's some blank space on there that you can write down simply who that actor or actress is in your life. And if you're at home and you're watching by yourself on the live stream, no one will think you're crazy if you just talk to yourself and you just say out loud who that favorite person is. But we wanted to give you 10 seconds to share who that favorite person is, whether it's Denzel or Sandra Bullock or whatever it may be. Easy enough? Ready, set, go! You see, every single one of us in this room have an actor that we connect with, even if it's those really bad actors that are in those Christian movies, like Facing the Giants. I picked a fight with all you Disney people last week, so I thought I'd just admit it and pick a fight with some of the more of you this morning. But if you're sitting there and you're saying, Ben, I have a favorite actor or actress, but it's definitely not The Rock, and I haven't seen that many movies from The Rock, let me bring you up to speed on this one thing about movies from The Rock. Every single movie that The Rock is in has this one underlining storyline, and that is this, is that every movie that he is in seems to possess a redemptive storyline. I mean, look at The Rock. The dude is huge. You know there's got to be a redemptive storyline in there. Like, he is fearless, and you know he's going to save the girl. He's going to save humanity. He's going to catch the bad guy. He's going to help the helpless. That's what The Rock is good at. And because of that, the reason why so many of us connect with movies from The Rock is this, is because the redemptive storyline is the storyline that we were created to live out in our lives. The redemptive storyline is the hope that we hang on to in every facet of our lives. We hang on to this hope that no matter what it is in our lives, it's not beyond saving. No matter how broken my marriage may be, no matter how far gone my grown kids may be, it's not beyond saving. There's still hope there that things can be turned around, that there can be healing that's brought into the scenario. We all desire a redemptive storyline to be written with our mistakes and our regrets and the moments of our past that we wish didn't happen, the moments of our present in which we're walking through something that isn't the ideal, but it's certainly the reality. If you haven't seen the movie Jungle Cruise, this new Disney adventure centers on this character that The Rock plays named Frank. And Frank is a riverboat captain on the Amazon in the early 1900s during World War I. And he encounters this young woman. Her name in the movie is Lily, played by Emily Blunt. And she is a doctor. And she has come to the Amazon seeking this urban legend, this tree that possesses these leaves that are called the Tears of the Moon. And the urban legend tells that but one leaf from this tree, of the Tears of the Moon, has the power to heal any ailment on earth. And she comes seeking this leaf, believing that if it can be found, then modern medicine and science as we know it would be changed for all of eternity. That the ailments that could be healed would be as numerous as you could count. And as she's tricked into hiring Frank the Rock as her riverboat captain, early on in their adventure, where there is not death staring them in the face as they're sitting on their jungle boat, they begin to have this incredible conversation. This incredible conversation that reveals something about both of their hearts. Check this out. He asked this question. So you want to save the world? You're willing to risk your life for the sake of people you don't even know. And in the aftermath of her response, The Rock gives his own analogy. This is absolutely incredible. I've always thought if you could find one person to care for, that was world enough. for me. And as he echoed this one phrase, as I watched this movie, in an instant, my mind went racing back to this reality that our God has that exact same mindset when it comes to you. Our God has this exact same mindset when it comes to me. Someone was broken. Someone needed healing. There was a story that needed redemption, a life that needed to be redeemed. And there was only one tears of the moon. It was his son. And he was willing to send it and sacrifice it to bring healing to a story, to just one life. That if there was just one person that I could find to care about, that's world enough for me. And as I thought about that quote, it immediately took me back to this passage that we found written thousands of years ago by one of Jesus' disciples named John. It's a passage that many of us have heard dozens, if not hundreds of times throughout our life. And because of that, we have this tendency to glaze over when we hear this passage. We've seen the signs held up in the back of end zones behind the goalposts at football games. And over time, it finds itself meaning less and less to us and carrying less and less meaning to our stories. And if this morning you find yourself in that camp, what I want to challenge you to is this. Instead of glazing over, would you lean back in for a second? Because there's a part of this passage that John writes in chapter 3 that oftentimes as we read it over and over again, we've missed time and time again. A part of this passage that's never been revealed to us that carries incredible weight for our lives and for our futures. And so this morning we dive into the book of John, chapter 3, starting in verse 16. If you haven't done so already, it's an incredible time for you to grab that weekly, pull out the notes page, and follow along with us as we move through the text. It'll also come up on the screen for you. But here is what John writes. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. You see, when we read this passage, what we oftentimes miss is this truth. That God's focus has always been on the whoever, not on the world. God's focus has always been on the whoever, not on the world. And I'm not sure if you've ever fully grasped this or not. Maybe you grew up going to church. Maybe you sit there every single week. And this has never been said to you. But for God, this practice of sending his son was never a calculation of when it would be worth it. It was never a calculated risk of, all right, now the world has 2 billion people, so I think that's enough to make the risk worth it of sending my son. No, that's not how it ever worked with our God. You see, our God looked at you. He looked at me individually as a whoever. And what he recognized was this, is that if I were the only person walking on this earth who had ever sinned, Jesus still would have hung on that cross for me. Like y'all, maybe the truth that you need spoken over you this morning as you walked into this place that really isn't the intention of the thrust of maybe where we're going this morning is this. And if you ever find yourself struggling with your worth, come back to this truth. That we have a God that loves you so much that he sent his son not for the enormity of the world, but for the singularity of you. That if you were the only person in need of saving, in need of a redemptive story to your past, he would have done it. No matter how broken you think you are, no matter what you think your past says about you, no matter the circumstances you find yourself walking in here with today, you were always worth it to God. Isn't that incredible? I mean, I don't have to look too far into my past to begin believing that there is no way I could be worth it to give up your perfect only son for me. No way. And God said, but you don't write the rules. You don't see what I see. I look at you and I so desperately want a relationship with just you. I was willing to move everything out of the way and send what was most precious to me so that you could begin writing a different story. But the question that comes to mind is this. But why? Why would he need to do that? Why would God need to do that for me? Simply put, because God saw the alternative that I had chosen, and he knew that alternative was not in my best interest. And he loved me too much for my only option to be the alternative. So he went to work on a solution. You see, what God knew about us as humanity is this. Is that as we chose our own way and made our own mistakes, our identity was set in stone. When we had regrets and did what we thought was best against what we knew God was calling us to or the direction he wanted for our lives, our identity was set in stone. And no amount of good works, no amount of being a good person, no amount of doing good things could ever change that identity. We were incapable of fixing it on our own. And some of us are sitting here, we're watching online, and we've grown up in church, and we have a relationship with Christ, and we're thinking right now, oh boy, here we go down this path of talking about identity in John 3:16 and this redemptive story that God has written in our lives. And I know all that stuff, and I'll just check out for the next 20 minutes. But here's what I want to challenge you to. There's an ending to all of this. That when we grasp this fully, it leads us, no matter where we're at, to a completely different future. That it pays dividends in every single one of our lives, whether we walk in here this morning and we have a relationship with Christ or we don't. That we recognize these two identities that we're dealing with in our lives, one that we have chosen that has been set in stone, and one that has been given to override all of that. You see, the identity that I have when I made my own choices, made my own mistakes, was first and foremost this. That as humanity, our identity has always been set in stone. From when Adam and Eve made their own choices, that we were defined as a sinner. At my core, that is who I am. This morning, we're going to spend a ton of time in the book of Romans because Paul has some incredible things to say. But in chapter 3, verse 23, he writes this. And if you're taking notes, I'd challenge you to underline a couple of words in here. For everyone, underline everyone, has sinned. We all fall short of God's glorious standard. This is every single one of our identities, that we have fallen short of the standard that has been set. And the standard is simply this, that in order for us to spend eternity in perfection, we had to live up to a standard of perfection. And I don't know about you, but I can speak for myself in saying this. I am a long ways from living up to that standard, y'all. I have fallen way short of that. And let's just put this out on the table. There is no ranking system when it comes to our sin. Hello, y'all okay? I don't get free passes or bonus points because somehow my sin isn't as bad as the person sitting next to me. Y'all, we are all broken in different ways, but we are all equally broken. This is our identity. This is who we are, who we were before Christ. Without Jesus, this defines me, and it will always define me. But it doesn't stop there. Because a sinner is a part of my identity, what also comes with that as a part of my identity is that I am also cursed. There are consequences for my choices, for the path that I have chosen for myself in looking at my God and saying, God, I know you're the God of the universe. I know you're the creator and sustainer of everything. I know you've numbered the hairs on my head. You know me better than anyone. You've got the 30,000 foot view of my life. But God, I got this. I don't really need you to tell me what's best for my life. I already know that. I'm good. And when we chose that own path on our own, it destined us towards this curse. That just a few chapters later, Paul points out. In chapter 6, verse 23, he simply says this, for the wages, what we get out of our sin, for the wages of sin is death. There's no or option to that. There's no second door to open. This is what we get. And frankly, this part of our identity is what I deserve. It's what I deserve. Because far too often in my life, the question that I ask and the hill I want to die on is this. How could a good God allow so much bad in the world? How could a God who loves me allow bad things to happen to me? There's been a time or two in every single one of our stories where we've asked that question. But the reality that we overlook in our stance on that hill in asking that question is this. God didn't choose the brokenness for this world. God didn't choose those circumstances for my life. I did. I chose that. I did that. We did that, y'all. God said, no. My intention is the garden. In the garden was for you to be perfect, for you to constantly be in relationship with me. Like we can walk together and we can have chats. And that was my intention. But you chose a different way. And I loved you enough to let you have a choice. Because I knew forcing you to love me wasn't really love at all. It wasn't really a relationship. And so I gave you an option. And Ben, you chose the option of going the other way. You chose the option of separation. And now that's become a part of your identity. And yet, in spite of that, we have a God who has more in store for us. There's this moment in the movie where they're fighting the bad guys. And The Rock has been stabbed through the heart with a knife. And he falls from a tree in the Amazon like 50 feet down in the water below. And everybody thinks he's dead, but as they push off the enemy and the bad guys, they soon realize that The Rock didn't die and he wasn't even bleeding from the wound that he had. And from that, Lily asked him this question. Who are you? Like, what is your identity? And The Rock answers in this way. I'm not sure who I am, but I can tell you who I was. As he begins, he lays out this story from his past. Check this out. there was this curse. And I don't know if you caught Frank saying it there, but because of the choices I made, this was placed upon me. And now I'm stuck in a place I don't want to be for all of eternity. Because of the direction I chose to go, this, the jungle, always takes me captive, always keeps me in a place I wasn't designed to be in. And it's something I can't fix on my own. It's something I can't make right. We all have that story written over our lives. And yet what I also know about our identity before Christ is that it isn't all bad news. Because what I know about you and me, it's the very reason why he gave us free will. It's the very reason why he sent his son, is because part of our identity as humanity on this earth has always been that we are loved. That's the third one. No matter how far gone you feel, no matter how much of a sinner you feel like you are, or how cursed you feel like you are, you have always been loved. And in chapter 5, Paul writes this, "But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us." And then this last part of the passage is absolutely incredible. "While we were still sinners." You know what Paul is saying there? That Christ came and he died for me and he died for you individually in the very moments that we were still turning our back on him. In the very moments we still thought we knew what was best for our lives. He still died for us in those very moments where we were making mistakes and choosing our own path. It was never God's hope or design for me to have those first two parts. But when he gave me free will and I chose my own way, we have a God whose love was defined by him going to work for a solution. Of being willing to give up anything and everything so that we could rewrite our story, so that we could rewrite our identity, and so that our old identity could be redeemed from that to this. That my new identity with Christ changes from sinner to righteous. In 2 Corinthians, Paul writes this incredible passage. "For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ." In another translation, it says, "so that we could be made the righteousness of God." There's a song we sing around here called "Gone." And if you've been around here for any amount of time, in the bridge, there's this line that says, "And I am the righteousness of God." And when we first started singing that song, there were some people who were like, "Man, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. I don't know if I really am that. That's lofty." And the reality is in this passage, Paul was laying this out. You're right. You're not that by yourself. But when Christ becomes a part of the picture, when God looks at you, now all he sees is perfection. You have been made right in the eyes of God. And this is so incredible. Not because of anything that you have done, but because of what he did. You can be made right and perfect in an instant. Isn't that incredible? That gift has been given to us to rewrite the script and the identity of our lives. And yet it doesn't stop there. Not only have we been deemed righteous, we have also been changed from cursed into chosen. That we become a chosen people. And another one of Jesus' disciples, Peter, writes this, "But you are not like that. You are not like the rest of the world. No. For you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of darkness into his wonderful light." See, we were cursed in our old identity before Christ, but now we become chosen. When God rewrites our identity, he starts throwing out words that are absolutely unbelievable. You are chosen. You are my possession. You are heirs. You are children. You are ambassadors of the kingdom. Isn't that incredible? That we become chosen by our Heavenly Father, not because of anything we have accomplished. And why that's so hard to fathom is this, is because that's not how it works in the real world. Am I right? Like, we become chosen in our workplaces or in our marriages or in our relationships because of what we accomplish. That's how we get chosen for things. That's how we get elevated. And yet God was the one that was willing to do something, not us. We couldn't fix it. We couldn't do something that would make it right. God made the choice. He did something that was absolutely reckless and unfathomable to send his only son, who was perfect, to take my place. And when he did it, then he still chose me. I didn't deserve that. I didn't earn that. And yet because of his son and the sacrifice he made, he said, now you are chosen. When you make my son a part of your storyline, you become chosen by the God of the universe. But our identity with Christ holds one last element that has been constant and unchanging throughout all of time, and that is this, that be it before Christ or be it with Christ, we will always be loved. It will always be a part of our identity that nothing you could do would ever cause God to love you any less, and nothing you could do would ever cause God to love you any more. In Romans chapter 8, Paul writes this incredible passage about nothing being able to separate us ever in our lives, nothing from our past, no regrets, no mistakes, nothing in this world from the love of our Heavenly Father. In chapter 8, verse 35, can anything ever separate us from Christ's love? Does it mean he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity or are persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger or threatened with death? No, despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow, not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or in the earth below, indeed nothing in all of creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus, our Lord. You know what Paul was saying there? We have a God who, no matter what, comes after you. Who, no matter what, sent his son for you. Who, no matter what, is in your corner, wanting what's best for you. That nothing changes that. That nothing separates us from that. We have a God who speaks this over your life and your story. Your story will never be beyond redemption. That opportunity is fully there for your identity to be flipped. And maybe you walked into this room and you look back on your past and you say, Ben, I don't like who I was. I don't like the story that's been written up until this point. Or Ben, frankly, if I were being honest, I don't like who I am. And I don't like who I see staring back at the mirror in me every single day of my life. Your story can be rewritten. We have a God who sent his son for that very purpose. And we can't change it on our own, but he can. God has given us a way. But for many of us, this is where we get stuck. You see, when we invite Christ into our story, we have this tendency to teeter one way or another in how we look at ourselves and our story. For some of us, we have the tendency to teeter towards constantly looking at ourselves through the lens of our old identity. We see the brokenness and the mistakes and the regrets, and what we've deemed is that we will never be good enough. We constantly view ourselves through our past brokenness. For others of us, we teeter the other way. And we fully grasp the grace that we've been given, and we use that grace as a crutch in our lives. And we find ourselves teetering to the side of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, who thought, well, I'm in with God, so I can do what I want. I can speak how I want. I've got this crutch called grace that I can just fall back on, and that gives me absolute freedom. And yet where we fall and how we teeter one way or another, it always ignores this truth, that fully acknowledging both identities is how we live a life of confident humility. You see, this is where the rubber meets the road for every single one of us in this room. We have to be people who are capable of seeing our old identity without being defined by our old identity. That we have to fully grasp both of them in order for us to live lives as humble servants to the world instead of being viewed by the world as prideful hypocrites to our own ego. Hello. Y'all okay? See, we need the world to see our humility. But if we don't live in confident humility where we can fully grasp what God has given us and how it's wiped away that past, then the world slowly closes in on our thoughts of never being good enough and constantly focusing on the mistakes. And that's where we find our lives dominated by fear and worry and anxiety and depression. No, God has written a better story from this day forward. And it's when we fully grasp both our old identity and who our new identity now makes us. At the end of the movie, Frank decides to crash the boat into this tunnel that has allowed the Amazon to flow. And as he crashes his boat with one purpose in mind, to save Lily and to save her life, he realizes that in stopping the flow of the Amazon, he will now be out of sight from the Amazon, and the curse will take him back. He will now die at the hands of the jungle to this wall. But he makes this decision because of what he believed and what he stood on from the very first clip that we watched. Check this out. Tell Lily she would have been world enough for me. With the same heart of our God, he makes a sacrifice to save one. One was worth it. But as Lily recognizes the sacrifice that has been made, it changes the way she views her life and her possession of the tears of the moon. Check this out. when she sees the sacrifice that was made. Worth it. A sacrifice for just one. The way in which she lives out her life in response to that sacrifice changes. And the same is true for us. It's the application piece that changes in our lives is this. Is that because God was always focused on the whoever instead of the world, now we begin to live in such a way in which we become people who are willing to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone. It's how we live out in our marriages, how we live out in our parenting, how we live out in our workplaces, how we live out in our world. I might not be able to change the world, but if I could change just one, it's world enough for me. See, our stories, our identities are capable of being rewritten. It's but one small step away. And all I can promise you is this, is that taking that step and rewriting your identity by bringing Christ into the fold of your life, your circumstances, your journey, it does not mean that your journey will get easier. I can't promise you that. In fact, there will be many times in which the journey gets difficult and harder. But what I can promise you is this. It will get better. It will be worth it. Today is the day to rewrite your story and to rewrite your identity into what God always designed for our lives. Would you pray with me? As you're sitting there this morning with your eyes closed, maybe for some of us in this room, and we're saying, Ben, I look on my past, I see a whole lot of instances in which I've made the wrong choice and I've made mistakes and I have regrets. And I thought I could fix it on my own, but I can't. For others of us, we sit there and we would say, Ben, at one point I had Jesus as a part of my story. And yet over the last decade, I've walked away. I've drifted. I've made the determination that it isn't worth it and that I knew better. And yet here I sit in the middle of a mess. Frankly, I need a change. I need my story, my identity to be rewritten. And if that's you, and you're on the fence, and today is the day to have the courage in your own heart, in your own mind, to simply pray this prayer. To repeat these words after me to yourself. God, I look back on my past. And if I were being honest, it's far from perfect. And I've tried to fix it on my own, but I can't. Today, I need you. Today, I thank you for sacrificing your son for the sake of my story. Today, I'm asking you into my life. I want to be right. I want to be chosen. I want to be loved. Thank you for doing that for me. It's in your name. For the rest of us, God, today. And even in having a relationship with you, it's so easy to pick one identity or the other to constantly define ourselves by. But God, to live in confident humility, a way in which the world needs us to live, we have to fully grasp both identities. And when we do, that allows us to live lives in which we're willing to do for one what we wish we could do for everyone. To make the sacrifices necessary, to just make a difference in our marriage, make a difference in our kids' life, make a difference in our friends, make a difference in our coworkers, to make a difference in our world one person at a time. May we be people who model that, are courageous enough for that, and whose stories paint a different picture for a world that's watching intently. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.